come back to fiat currency. It's, you know, backed by the full faith of the government that, you know, there's nothing backing it. So when people lose faith in that, or they start to see governments and it gets out of control, which it is out of control, but it can be out of control for a long time. You know, again, you know, in the big picture, when you look back 100 years from now, you will see that these currencies have collapsed. But again, I wouldn't bet, you know, I'm 58 years old. I'm not going to bet everything, because it might not be in my lifetime. It might be 30 years from now. I'm not saying I think it will be. I think we're getting close to an inflection point, you know, and I'm going to have a major correction. But again, it doesn't influence my investing on hard assets. I'm always buying hard assets. I'm always investing in resource companies. So that's what I do.
Hey, y'all, this is Tiffany Georgopoulos here, and today I'm here with Jeff Phillips. Jeff, the last time I saw you, we were at the Rule Symposium. How are you?
I am doing excellent. I'm actually wearing my Rule Symposium shirt that I got at the Rule Symposium right now. So.
Oh, perfect. What a coincidence. And can you just give a brief of what your specialty is, a little bit about who you are for those who don't know?
Well, my background, I'm an entrepreneur, you know, going way back, but, you know, most of my career I've spent in the natural resource market. And when I say that, you know, things like gold, copper, silver, lead, zinc, rare earths, graphite. And I'm really on the front end of that curve. I'm financing geologists that are looking to improve something that was, you know, maybe discovered decades ago in a different commodity price time frame, and believe it's bigger and more economic at these prices. So I'm financing those early stage drill programs, you know, creating PEAs, which are pre-economic assessment, or even a pre-feasibility study. But I'm at the very front end, the very high risk, what they call the junior resource exploration and development companies.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to talking to you about that regarding the topic we're going to get into. And as you know, I'm still very new to this space and I'm learning more and more every day. And over the past few months, I have kept seeing de-dollarization come up on my social medias. And specifically, people are wondering whether or not the dollar will lose its dominance. But I think the better question to ask would be fiat currencies compared to hard assets. So before we get into it, could you briefly describe what fiat currency is, how it gets its value, and how that compares to things like gold and other tangible assets?
Yeah, the short answer is a fiat currency is money that has value because a government declares it to be legal tender, not because it's backed by a physical commodity like gold or silver, which is a whole, I don't know if you want to get into that, but our dollar used to be backed by gold and silver, but it's not backed by hard assets. So it's a fiat currency, whatever government is that they're, you know, you're accepting that it's legal tender and the government says so.
Awesome. So we have fiat currency on one side, tangible hard assets on the other. And given your experience, if fiat is losing purchasing power, then what does that mean for the stock market, specifically in the natural resource sector?
Well, again, the questions are easier to answer if you have no time frame, because eventually all fiat currencies have imploded. So over time, I mean, you know, if you go back through history, governments print more and more money, they create inflation, hyperinflation. And so the real question is, like, on hard assets, you know, I mean, people obviously say gold and silver, but, you know, land is a hard asset. Your house is a hard asset to a degree. Oil and gas, you know, copper, these are all hard assets, physical things that you hold on to that, you know, the government can't just create out of thin air. So over time, you know, governments, you know, become less and less, they tax more, they create inflation, they print more money. So yeah, the currencies become worth less. So I often ask people, and this isn't my area of expertise, but, you know, people often talk about how real estate is a wonderful investment over time. It's a hard asset, but, you know, and it has gone up a lot, but you have to really look at how much the dollar's gone down in that time frame. Has your real estate gone up, or has your purchasing power gone down that much? And I think real estate probably, I haven't done a study, but I'm sure some of your speakers that you'll have on this subject are much more well versed in it. But my guess is that, you know, the price increase in hard assets reflects a lot of the decrease in the purchasing power of the dollar, which really, you know, when President Nixon finally took us off the last part of the gold standard, where we backed our money, we'd already come off back in the 30s from, you know, where gold was, you could walk into a bank and exchange your bills for gold or silver. We'd taken that away and said, it's backed by us. But, when Nixon was president, the French, I believe it was, came in and wanted to get all their IOUs paid in gold out of Fort Knox. And that was still available and still what you could do with if you the government, U.S. government owed you money. And Nixon put an end to that. So basically said, we're no longer exchanging even with other countries and central banks, those debts for gold. Since that time, I don't know, but I think you mentioned earlier you had Rick Rule yesterday, and that's a horrible person to follow for an interview, because Rick's a very knowledgeable person on that and a good friend of mine. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he cited in his interview yesterday what that, 95 cents on the dollar, 90 cents on the dollar since we came off the gold standard is, you have 10 cents left of what the dollar used to buy you. So again, the currency is deflating, and they're doing that around the world. It's not just the U.S. government.
So with the dollar deflating, purchasing power going down, do you think that there's certain sectors that you think tend to benefit in that environment? Like, where does that leave junior miners?
Well, again, the junior mining space, because you said earlier this is a show for new investors, is a very risky area. Most people shouldn't be in the junior resource space. It should be a small piece of your overall financial pie that you're trying to get an outsized return on it. If you're really looking to buy hard assets and say you believe gold's going higher, which I do, I think it's in a bull market. I think we've had a healthy correction. I think it's resuming the uptrend. Just my opinion. This isn't investment advice.
Yeah.
But if you wanted exposure to gold, then you might want to buy a little bit of physical gold. That would be the first thing. If you want more leverage to the price of gold, believing it's going up, then you start to look at some of your major miners. Your Agnico Eagles, your Newmonts, your Barricks, companies like that. There's a whole list of them that are bigger companies that will have in a good gold market because they're producing and making more money. They will have a better return than, per se physical gold. So that would be your next stop. And so again, most new investors don't have the capital to really get to the junior resource market. And even that, I'm just using gold as an example. You could use copper companies, buy physical ETF copper, then buy some big copper companies, but same thing. But that really should be, even as a young investor, that should be it's like your hard asset insurance. When you buy a house, you get fire insurance. You hope you never have to use it, but if you do, you're glad you had it. So that physical metals that you own in a way, and again, taking delivery of gold, I prefer over an ETF. Of course, then you have to put it somewhere safe, in a safe or hidden in your house or in, which again is everybody's got their own preference. But so, and again, the junior resource market, and again, a lot of your young listeners are, probably, on Robinhood and all these different platforms and trading options and doing stuff that's high risk. This is the same stuff, whether it's a mem stock, but in the junior resource markets, educated speculating. So, and we can get into that later, what to look for in that. But the bottom line is I don't think the junior resource in an overall investing really in the fiat currency sort of plays into this. With what you should be buying if you believe that your country or your currency is going down in value and you want to save value. That's more your real estate, your precious metals. Even in collectibles can be lumped into that. I collect baseball cards and old comic books because I think they're, a form of a hard asset, that there's only a certain number of these in this grade. And so anyway, but I don't know if that answered your question, but hopefully I tried.
No, yeah, it does. So you're saying that personal assets that not only you must already have, like, well, not for all young investors, but like your house or even young investors with collectible cards or stuff like that. And then also putting your money into maybe the bigger companies so that it's more of a wealth protection. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, correct. And lower risk. I mean, obviously, if gold falls, and I'm wrong, and gold falls in the next 3 years drastically, it'll have ups and downs. But I think the general tone is moving up in the current fiat currency situation. And I think hard assets will continue to do well. You see copper at record highs. Uranium is very interesting. And, and we can get into that too, that, the U.S. government's finally realizing that they've listed a ton of metals that are critical metals now. And I think they've allocated $40 billion so far with not much rhyme or reason to how they're doing that to try to secure more of a supply of some of these. Because when you look at something like rare earths, the Chinese government provides 90% of the world's rare earths. Those are critical metals in fighter jets, military, cell phones, AI, computers, chips. So, the government's, I was involved in the rare earth boom, the first one back in 2008. And we, people like Mr. Jim Dines, who was a mentor and famous newsletter writer, and John Kaiser, we all championed that, we need to secure the supply of rare earths. And there was a mini boom where, but, then the Chinese dropped the prices and the US government wasn't paying attention. So nobody could finance those rare earth mines in Western friendly countries. So it died. So China to this day still controls that. But you're seeing it in the news a lot more now that the US government's moving, even like uranium. Nuclear is becoming a bigger push around the world. The Chinese are building, I don't even know how many reactors they're building right now. But uranium, I forget the numbers again, I'm not the best at numbers. But the overall thing is that, I think, 22% of our electricity comes from nuclear energy here in the United States. And we only produce about 3% of the uranium we need to run those reactors, something like that. And we get the rest from some friendly countries and some places like Russia and Kazakhstan. And I mean, I guess Kazakhstan's friendly, but we've seen what happened to Ukraine. And again, you need to secure your own supply. So a lot of these hard assets go into critical, whether it's energy, AI infrastructure, copper, nuclear. So again, there's two things we're kind of getting off subject here. You started with fiat currencies, but those are all hard assets, and you're seeing the government move to secure those. So that affects the junior resource and development space greatly. So.
So going off of that, we're seeing a lot of governments taking to secure these resources, and central banks are continuing to add gold to their reserves. And we're seeing more talk of countries looking for alternatives to the dollar. What do you think that that tells us about confidence in fiat currencies?
Well, I think it's going down. So, more and more people, and even other countries, it's kind of interesting because the Chinese have been selling off government US bonds, and the one that's really picked up the slack is the Canadian government buying treasuries from the US government. Now we're in a tariff war with the Canadians. So again, at some point, our federal debt is what, it just crossed $40 trillion. I think I read the other day that our interest on that alone is over $1 trillion now. There's all kinds of black swans out there that at some point are going to pop this debt fueled, whether it's government, private, AI bubble, and it's not going to be pretty. And in the short term, just so your new listeners know, if you go out and buy an ounce of gold and pay, I don't know, it's $4,500 an ounce today or something like that. I'm not saying it's going straight up. I mean, if you have a financial crisis like 2007 and 8, where the real estate crisis happened, or going back to the dot-com before any of your listeners were born, probably both cases. But,
But still good to know. You got to know the foundations of how this happens to be able to assess what's going to happen now and see what happens in the long term.
So as a newer investors, I would caution you that in a liquidity crisis, when a bubble bursts or a black swan that no one sees coming creates a watershed event, even the hard assets, gold, in 2007 and 8, I think it had reached almost $1,000 an ounce when we had that real estate crisis, and the government had to bail out banks and for your listeners and everything else. Gold dropped from, right just under $1,000, I think somewhere in the $700 range, so a 30% drop. It then proceeded, a year and a half later to run all the way to almost $2,000. So gold's going higher, but if you're betting in the short term, like I hope to buy an ounce of gold and sell it 2 months from now, that's a bad strategy.
Interesting. So you'd recommend if you're putting it your money in gold, don't look at more short-term benefit, but more so long-term benefit.
I think in any hard assets, you need to look over time. And what you're really betting on is that your government, in this case, the US government's going to keep being irresponsible, taking on debt, printing money, and those hard assets are going to go up just because it takes dollars to buy them and dollars are worth less. So you're conserving purchasing power in the future. I will tell, yes, and I don't know, and I'll end this long diatribe here, but another, again, Jim Dines, Mr. Jim Dines was a very famous newsletter, wrote his newsletter for 61 years, very successful. Overall markets called the internet, before anybody knew what the internet was, even the marijuana boom at 80 years old, he was asking me to go out and look. He knew, he called big picture stuff, and he'd be fascinated today to see what's going on with rare earths because he called this 16 years ago. But one of his most famous sayings, he had all these dynisms, and there are like 60 of them about living your life and also investing. One was always rich or poor, it's good to have cash. And what that means really is that whether you're just starting out or you're a very wealthy individual, you don't want to be over leveraged. Because you're not going to get the timing of everything right. So you always want to have dry powder. So that would be a good piece of invest, whether you're looking at hard assets or AI stocks. You never want to go all in. You want to have something in reserve, no matter what your net worth is.
So you discussed, and also that was a great piece of information. I love that, especially for young and new investors. But you talked about the governments. Obviously, we're in debt, we're printing money, we're getting gold, and monetary policies are changing, like rate cuts, etc. How does that shift, or I guess, does that shift help you weigh stocks versus hard assets? Like, where does that leave you? What do you think about that?
Say, repeat that one more time. I'm sorry, the beginning of it.
So when monetary policies are changing and everything, how does the shifts that are going on weigh your stocks versus hard assets?
Well, again, most of my investing, I'm not a good example, is in the natural resource space. That's my specialty. So I have a big chunk of, when I say a big chunk, maybe a third of my capital in highly speculative hard asset stocks. And again, I'm not betting that the commodity price is going to go up, even though I believe that is what's happening. I'm betting that the technical team are going to be able to, at the current price, show that this is can be a mine and I can sell this to a bigger miner in that specific commodity, because I've proven that. And a lot of the companies in the junior resource space don't have really, they have no reserve, they have no real resource. They have some drill holes. They may have they may have a PEA, but again, I'm not betting on any of that. I'm betting that, at the end of the day, if I can discover a copper deposit that's going to have all-in costs of $3 a pound copper, and copper's trading at six and doesn't go anywhere, it's a very profitable mine. So again, but the monetary policy, again, there's two pictures where I keep jumping back to the junior resource space. Again, over time, hard assets are going to go up because the governments, we can sit there and debate whether they're going to start controlling their spending. They're not. They never have. That's not, so it's just a question. You come back to fiat currency. It's, backed by the full faith of the government that, there's nothing backing it. So when people lose faith in that, or they start to see governments and it gets out of control, which it is out of control, but it can be out of control for a long time. Again, in the big picture, when you look back 100 years from now, you will see that these currencies have collapsed. But again, I wouldn't bet, I'm 58 years old. I'm not going to bet everything because it might not be in my lifetime. It might be 30 years from now. I'm not saying I think it will be. I think we're getting close to an inflection point, and I'm going to have a major correction. But again, it doesn't influence my investing on hard assets. I'm always buying hard assets. I'm always investing in resource companies. So that's what I do.
Yeah, of course. And I know that the topic is fiat currencies compared to hard assets, but we can really go into any tangent just because, we're all new here. We're still, well, for me at least, and I'm still learning about things. So all information is good information. But you talked about thinking that there's going to be a correction. I'm curious what makes you say that.
Because you've had an historic bull market, you've got, almost every metric, the markets are overvalued. It doesn't mean they can't be being more overvalued. That, again, they were overvalued in 1999, and they went up until 2000, and the dot-com blow up and the Nasdaq blow up. That would the Nasdaq drop 50 or 60%? Again, when people get scared, the fear of missing out, FOMO, is very powerful. But the other side of that is even more powerful when liquidity dries up. I mean, there's all kinds of things out there. The private credit markets, you've seen, I can't remember the guy's name who owns the Dodgers, but there's lots of people reporting on the private credit market. It's the Wild West, financing these, using insurance companies' money, so teachers' pensions and their annuities, and they're funding these private deals that, again, are very opaque. That could be the recipe for disaster. Artificial intelligence, AI, it's incredible. It's going to change the world for the better or the worse, or maybe a little of both. But I can guarantee you right now, there's a big misallocation of capital. People aren't doing their due diligence. Just like I don't believe the US government, is spending $40 billion backing natural resource companies and stocks, and they don't really have a plan, but in the grand scheme of things, when you're running $1 trillion a year in interest debt, they just throw money out there. I just think there's a massive misallocation of capital. The due diligence isn't being done in multiple areas. It's been easy money, and at some point, whether it's next month, next year, or 3 years from now, I'm going to be happy to own some hard assets. I'm going to be happy with my real estate. Not necessarily did it go up. It's just the rest of the market, you know, as repriced. And anyway, and I think gold does very well over time in that environment. Same with silver.
So you talked about allocation and people not doing their due diligence. And I talked with Rick about this yesterday, but now I'm curious your answer too, because you just mentioned you're going to be happy to be sitting on the hard assets that you've invested in. Historically, most financial advisors have allocated less than 1% to gold. Now we're seeing some recommend 15 to 20%. And given your experience, what do you think about that?
I don't know how to comment on that. I think you want to have more than 1 or 2%. I'm probably closer to the 15 to 20%, which is a lot of gold and silver. But again, I'm not necessarily a gold bug. I'm a fiat currency bear. So, you know, again, at the end of the day, I think the dollar, the yuan, the pound, whatever you want, the loonie, whatever you want to name, Canada, China, they're printing money in these social programs. You can't go on forever. But again, forever can, you know, even in the near term, could be a longer term than I believe. So again, rich or poor, it's good to have cash. Don't bet everything on you know, it takes time for the things to play out. So, but I'm sure, you know, again, I'm sure Rick, when you asked him the question, because I've seen many interviews with Rick, you know, talked about, you know, even in the past history for the gold ownership, I'm sure he said this yesterday, and I can't remember the numbers he quotes, but you know, currently we're at 1% of assets that people have are in precious metals, and historically it's been 2% or something like that. Well, even that amount of additional buying in equities, ETFs, physical, is like fitting, you know, the contents of the Hoover Dam through a garden hose. So that's a massive, and that's just over time. And then, you know, but yeah, back to your question, you know, I personally would have, you know, 5 or 10% of my assets in gold and silver. So, but for the longer term, you know, I'll give you an example, Tiffany. I give my nieces and nephews and different milestones in their lives an ounce of gold. And my nephew will kill me if he sees this, but I gave my nephew, I don't know, graduated from high school maybe 5, 6 years ago. I gave him, you know, his second ounce of gold. And you know, and then he, you know, and I think gold was at $1,800 an ounce. You know, about a year later, he sold it for $2,400 an ounce and thought he was a genius. So I call him all the time now and I say, hey, gold just hit 5,000, you know, go sell your gold. He gets so mad at me. And his sister, who has a number of ounces, she's older from me, always asks me, Uncle Jeff, do you think, you know, when I'm your age, I should hold this and it'll be worth more? 100%. It will be worth more when you're my age. So again, I think holding that stuff. I bought my first gold when I'd sold a company and did very well, a public oil and gas company. And I think I took half, and it was quite a bit of money. And I took half of it and bought gold. And even my friends that are in this business thought, well, that's a weird allocation. But I paid $297 an ounce for it. That was 1999. So, you know, 27 years ago, but you know, it's done all right. So.
I love that story. That's so great. So I'm also curious what you would tell, your nephews, your nieces, whoever it is, like what if they came to you and were saying, Uncle Jeff, I want to start investing and building my portfolio. What would you tell them to look for? What should they be paying attention to? And that's for me as well. I mean, I'm just like, pretending to.
Well, I think again when you're younger, you know, and I wish I probably would have done more of this. But you know, again, you have to define what you're trying to do. You know, it's really hard when you're in your 20s to think about retirement, and trust me, it comes faster than you think. So, but you know, I think you know having a basket, not putting all your eggs in one basket, and buying, you know, again, I think the market is kind of overvalued right now. It doesn't mean I wouldn't put a
How
little bit of
so?
money. Well, again, back to the misallocation of capital, whether it's governments, companies. I mean, you even see all these big tech companies taking on massive amounts of debt, and that debt's costing more now for these AI build outs and other things, you know, states, cities. You know, again, I think we've had, you know, this is a we've had a, you know, partly because we're printing fiat currency 100 miles an hour and interest rates reached, you know, you didn't, my daughter, who's 21, I guess, you know, it was hard to explain to her. When I was teaching her about finance from the age of 7 to 16 why you save money, because it's really hard to explain that you put your money in the bank and you don't earn any interest because the interest rates are basically zero. I didn't grow up in that environment. I learned that, I put my money in a savings account, I get 5% back when it compounds over time. And so again, you have more options as a young person now because you are starting to see interest rates climb, and I think they will continue to climb. But again, the government can do things in the short term that change that. But over time, they're going to. So, again, I think coming up with a conservative plan, where you're investing in the overall market, the S&P 500 over time, even if I'm right that we could have 10 years coming up of what I call dead money, like after the dot-com blow up in 2000, it took the Nasdaq 10 years to get back to the old price. So again, if you'd gotten out right before that and bought at the bottom, you would have done really well, but most people don't. So you need to invest for the long haul. So even putting some money in an ETF that tracks, a bigger market like this, is a good place to start. But again, I do believe there's going to be a correction. But I think if you're 20 years old, and even though it seems like a long time off, when you're in your 50s, you'll be your portfolio will be much higher. So averaging into those things, and then and a lot of young people are making the mistake of playing these meme stocks and learning to option trade. And but if you want to play and you are young and you want to risk some of your money, looking at the hard asset explorers and things like that can be fun. But again, it's not just listening to someone on a show who says these three stocks are great, they're tiny, they could go up tenfold. You better do some due diligence because 90% of these aren't going to do that. So 99% probably.
Interesting. So when I'm looking to invest, because I want to be 50 and very thankful that I started now. Should I be looking at like royalties, for example? Can you explain to me the difference if I were to invest in a royalties company versus just a bigger like Barrick or something else? Like,
Well,
can you just
Barrick's a producing company. So like Barrick and Newmont and Agnico Eagle are producers. So that means they go out and they raise capital. They have costs to build the mine. They have costs to operate the mine, and they make the profit off of the mine, the difference in what it costs them to do all that and what the underlying commodity sells for, and then all their G&A and everything else. So a royalty company is something different. And in the hard asset space or the mining space, a royalty company often puts up money to a company that's going to build a mine or has a mine, or a streaming company, something different. Royalty and streaming is kind of the same thing. But basically,
What is a streaming?
streaming, I'm not an expert in either one of these. Again, stream royalty is more a perpetual ongoing return, net smelter royalty or some sort of financial. And if the mine gets bigger, you keep getting more. Whereas the streaming is more of a fixed asset. You're putting up a certain amount of money to help a company build something, and you've got the right for a certain period of time to buy the silver or get this return, but it usually decreases over time and becomes less. Whereas if I go out and I was lucky enough to say I have a company that I think is going to be in production in 4 years and they're doing a bankable feasibility study, and I go to them and say, I'll give you $10 million, I want a 2% net smelter royalty on your asset. Well, if that asset's throws off lots of cash, I get that no matter what their costs are or the price of the commodity, I'm going to get 2% of that revenue. So, and that can go on forever. And I'm, if you were asking Rick, he'd tell you the story about how he bought Franco-Nevada in the 80s. And I can't even remember, it was a predecessor company. And their big thing was, I forget what they put in, it was like $2 million in a royalty into one of Barrick's mines that over time's ended up returning over $1 billion because it keeps getting bigger and producing. So the royalty and streaming companies in the space, some of them aren't run as well, are a less risky way to play like a one mine operator. So royalty and streaming companies in the natural resource space tend to be a safer way to play and still have leverage on like the big miners. So there's also another model called prospect generators, which they leverage out. They develop projects and they joint venture those out to other companies to do the expensive drilling and so forth. And those companies turn it into those projects. That's also a lower risk than going out and spending all your money trying to drill your own property. So those are two models inside the junior res or the natural resource space that make a lot of sense. But anyway, so but
So if you're looking to put your money in something to keep it safe and have wealth protection, and you're putting them in hard assets, what is something that would make you cautious about, like, just the natural
Our
resource
asset.
sector.
Well, in the short term, again, you don't want to be over leveraged that, in a liquidity crisis, which we will have one coming again in the future, guaranteed. So, all assets, people look for liquidity. So gold sells off too in the short term because people have to raise money to pay for their over leveraged AI bet that they made or whatever else. So again, you should always be looking at the longer term. So again, your gold and silver, if you're looking at that, should be, 10%, of a young person's portfolio. Again, I'm not a financial planner, and you should do a lot of research and reading, but having, if you're younger, you can take more risk, having a larger percentage in the overall ETFs, not expensive funds that charge you a lot, is probably the best way to go. And I think a lot of the platforms, I don't know about Robinhood, but Charles Schwab and place like that have great educational tools and models that you can do. And again, your generation is so much different. And even, the younger kids that are in their teens, they're so much more advanced technology-wise. And the most important thing is, if you're, besides your investment thing, is to invest in yourself. A lot of people come to me and say, if you were starting out right now, what would you get in? I'd learn everything I can about artificial intelligence. I'd study, what ChatGPT, the different avenues. I'd look at Claude and how you can build. I'd learn to use AI very quickly because it's going to be part of everything. It's just in the last 4 years, I've got friends that have been building websites and doing design work for 20, 30 years, since the internet became popular. And they're not even doing that anymore. They're just using the AI models to build very complicated websites, and they're still charging. And again, there's so many opportunities in artificial intelligence and building things and doing it quicker. Tiffany, when you're asking me like advice, your listeners might be thinking of starting a business, which is the greatest investment you can make. And starting a business in yourself, believing in what you're doing something you love. There's so many opportunities when you're running your own business to, not be working for someone and stuck with your paycheck. And I'd encourage you to go start your own business. And but you have it so much better than we did, because that used to take me a month and a half to write a business plan. Well, I go now and just for fun, I think of all kinds of cool business ideas, and I go, I use AI, some of the paid programs, and I'm like, just for fun, and I'll come up with something, and it'll write my whole business plan. Then I go through it, and that's just for fun. I'm not starting a business, but I'd invest in yourself. I would look at what you really enjoy and figure out. Go on the AI, say, this is what I really enjoy. What's the best way for me to start a business? And this, be fascinated what you get back.
I love that. And going off of what you were talking about, starting, your portfolio, investing in yourself, I'm just curious what you look for in a company before putting your money into it, and if there's any companies you're particularly interested in right now.
Yeah, so again, that's a question. I mean, if you were talking about regular investing, not speculative junior resource investing, those are two different questions. So, you're looking for, growth earnings per share, dividends, these types of things, and that's what your listeners probably should be focusing on. I'm in the,
I'd like to hear the other one as well.
All
I
right.
never.
Well, if you want to talk about the natural resource space, especially most of these companies are tiny. They're listed in Canada, Australia, some of them on the AIM exchange in London. But the two most important things, if you are in the junior resource space, are people and share structure. And the reason I say that is because most of these are burning matches. If you hold them long enough, you will get burned. So you really want a management team that has done something before in a small cap. I'm talking 10, 20, 40, $100 million market cap companies. Have they built an asset before and sold it to someone else? What's their track record? And also, how much of the company do they own? Is it mostly options and free stock that they've gotten for running the company, or these guys put real money in? And if they do own a lot of the company, what price did they pay for that? And is it fully reporting? So what that means is, I want to see, when I invest in a company, like you saw at Rick Rule's conference, all of those companies are in that boat. They're all, except for a couple that were majors, but most of them are juniors. I want to know how much management owns, and is it fully reporting, which means they can't sell it without me seeing it. And then I want to know who the other shareholders are. Are they people that are just hoping to double their money from a $40 million market cap to an $80 million market cap? Are these people like, are there shareholders like BlackRock and, Tembo, some of these big funds that own 9.9? They may not be fully reporting, but these guys aren't investing in the company to put $10 million in and get 10 million back. It makes no difference to their, they need a big win. They need to grow up, see a company become a $1 billion asset. So that's what I look for. The other shareholders, the share structure, how much management owns, are the most important things to me.
Well, I'll definitely take that with me. And I mean, I'm just so appreciative to, be able to talk to you and learn from you, especially again, because I'm new and it's always great to just talk to someone with this experience. So, with your experience in this and you doing this for the amount that you have and being in the natural resource space, what is one either book, YouTube channel, website, or a habit that you would tell me or your daughter or your nephews or your nieces to start doing, looking at, etc.?
I'm trying to remember the title of the book. There's about five books, but I give a book to everybody who graduates from high school. It's probably 100 years old. I don't see it sitting here, but it usually, oh, there it is. I'll even show you a picture. It's called How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Ah.
I think it's one of the best books ever written. If you want to start your own business, you want to be successful in life. It's a 100-year-old book, but I think it's a great start to understand a number of things. So that's the book I'd recommend. I used to have like 20 copies here, but I've given them all out. So How to Win Friends and Influence People, because at the end of the day, you're selling yourself. And again, I'm an entrepreneur. And I encourage all your, if you're young, not to be pessimistic and not to listen to me, because the future is always great. In the short term, you can have some pretty big corrections, but it's changing rapidly with AI. I'd learn about AI. I know that your listeners already know more about AI than I probably do. But again, I think that's just an area that there's so many opportunities. So really, I'd invest in yourself and start your own business. That would be the best advice I can give you. Find
It
something you
seems to be.
enjoy. Yeah.
What'd you say?
Find something you enjoy and plan on, even if it's a side business because you're young and you're doing this, come up with something. It's so easy. I mean, there's so many articles I read about, someone starts a business using an AI and it's whatever, a newsletter, and it's $1 a month, and all of a sudden she has 30,000 subscribers. Well, that's, 360 grand a year. So there's so many, become entrepreneurial is what I would tell people.
Well, I love it. Seems to be the general consensus of everyone that I talk to, invest in yourself. And I love that. Everything starts with you, and everything you put out into the world is what usually gets you where you need to be. So, well, overall, I just appreciate even being able to talk to you. I'm happy we not only got to talk some about fiat currencies compared to hard assets, but also just the investor space and for people watching that are new to this world like me. And I just really appreciate your time and being able to talk to you.
Well, thank you for having me, and I hope it was somewhat helpful.
Oh, it definitely was. Well, thank you so
Yeah.
much, Jeff.
Have a great day.
You too.